well, the lectionary theme this morning, very clearly and obviously about forgiveness. And all around the world, because it's the common lectionary, all around the world, Christians will be reading this parable today and thinking of the unforgiving servant with this theme of the importance of forgiveness. I'm sure that one of the most poignant places and the country where this reading will raise most questions and debates is, of course, America. Today, a decade after 9/11 to the day. And we come back to that a little bit later. Let's start by looking at the parable itself. And the story starts with Peter going to Jesus, and he asks how often he must forgive. Rabbis often limited forgiveness to 3 times for given sins. So you could forgive someone, you know, up to 3 times, and it's 3 strikes and you're out kind of thing, you know. Peter, when he goes to Jesus and says, you know, shall I do it 7 times? I mean, he's going, you know, he's doubling it plus one. He's really sort of pushing the boat out in terms of forgiveness at the time. And the response that Jesus gives must have taken him back something, because Jesus says, no, not just 7 times, but 77 times. Now, 7, the number of completion, times by itself with a 10 at the start. I mean, this is huge kind of understanding of forgiveness. It's quite interesting because I often think that Jesus takes the Old Testament and makes it kind of sorts it out. When you read the Old Testament, I don't know about you, but I so often read the Old Testament and it just kind of leaves me cold. You know, I hear about, you know, God telling them, go into this land and kill all the people and take it for yourselves, or go around and do this. It's all so horrible and bloodthirsty and vengeful and nasty, so much of it, and attributed to God, you know. And it's quite interesting. Jesus takes so many of these stories, makes sense. And when he says 70 times 7, I'm sure people would have remembered that in Genesis, that Lamech cries out for vengeance 70 times 7. And Jesus takes that Old Testament understanding, 70 times 7 of vengeance, and says, no, forgive 77 times. And so Jesus taking that Old Testament bit and making it mean something that makes sense to me anyway. So Jesus calls for unlimited forgiveness. It's expanding the arithmetic to a level that you can't really understand 77 times. I thought I'd steal the phrase of Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story. Jesus is saying forgiveness is to infinity and beyond. It's infinite forgiveness. That's what Jesus is talking about, infinite forgiveness. You can't imagine the number of times that you've got to forgive. And then Jesus, of course, tells this wonderful parable. And it's a parable of a Gentile king who has such a large debt owed by a servant that it's just, again, unimaginable. The debt is too big. I tried to do a little bit of study on how big this 10,000 bags of gold debt really was. And it transpires that it would have been greater than all the coins in Egypt. So when Jesus is talking about, you know, a big debt, he's not really meaning just a big debt. He's meaning a debt which the servant actually couldn't have even amassed himself, even if he'd gone out and squandered it all on whatever. King Herod's annual income from all the taxes of his territories was a mere 900 talents a year. And Josephus, that Jewish historian, reports that the annual tribute from Galilee and Perea unto the wealthy Herod was only 200 talents. So this 10,000 bags of gold, what Jesus is saying is there was this debt that was bigger than it's bigger than the debt of America. You know, it's huge. And the king demands that the money's paid, and then he changes his mind. He says, no, I'm going to let you off this debt. This was a magnanimous gesture, again, beyond measure. It was unrivaled grace and mercy. The servant is let off. And the king must expect that having been let off such a huge debt, that the servant must have somehow been changed in his heart. You know, because he had had this huge weight lifted off him. And, you know, I mean, everyone who knows about debt knows that debt is like a huge weight. And so to have it just erased, the king was thinking, oh, he'll be a changed man because of this. But of course we read that the the servant isn't a changed man at all. He goes away, and someone who owes him a little tiny debt, he says, pay it back. No, I can't pay it back. Well, into prison, you see, has him tortured and in prison, separated from his family and everything. So the king, when he hears about this, obviously realises the servant hasn't been told at all. It's a wonderful insight, actually, into what was going on at the time with people being thrown into prisons and tortured for debts and what have you. But it's also meant to be a wonderful story about forgiveness and God's forgiveness, giving us an insight into what forgiveness should be like and how it should transform people. And that brings us to making it somehow real in our lives, in our churches, in our communities, and in our world. And this terrible problem of the fact that we find ourselves, by some strange quirk of fate, talking about forgiveness on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. When these planes flew into the World Trade Center, took out two towers, one went to the Pentagon, and of course that one that crashed in the field in Pennsylvania. Nearly 3,000 people being killed. And, you know, when we talk about forgiveness, how do we deal with a dreadful atrocity like that? And how does a nation like America begin to forgive? And I suppose when we hear the SEALs, you know, going into Pakistan and taking out Osama bin Laden, the man behind Al-Qaeda and the mastermind, it's believed, of the terrible attack on America. I suppose a part of us says, oh, great, you know, he's got his comeuppance. But where does forgiveness fit into all that? And at what stage do you somehow have to break the cycle of violence so that it doesn't just go on and on and on? So that, you know, hearing of his death, his supporters think, oh, we've got to avenge his death. And this vengeance being something that eventually cripples us. Where do we go? I mean, I'm sure there can be forgiveness. And I mean, there must be forgiveness. And people still have to be arrested and do their time. And there can be forgiveness and no reconciliation, because it takes two to be reconciled. So forgiveness is a complicated concept. But one in which we have to wrestle. And you look at places like Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, since the terrible atrocities of 9/11, there's been in which nearly 3,000 people got killed. You look at Operation Iraq Freedom, and 4,400 Americans have lost their lives in that. And in Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, another 1,648 Americans have lost their lives. So, you know, we're already more than double Americans have lost their lives in the attacks after 9/11 than lost them in the thing itself. Now, that's not too, and that, of course, doesn't include all the British lives and other lives that have been, 558 British troops, and many from around the world. And this is just a recognition that out of one crime can come other deaths and problems, and it's not to make a judgment at all, just to raise the questions. But I look at a wonderful example of how to deal with terrible atrocities and how forgiveness can make a difference. And perhaps the greatest that most of us will remember will have been South Africa and what happened there following the end of apartheid, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who kind of led South Africa out of that terrible time. And he wrote the process. He says, forgiveness does not mean condoning what has been done. It means taking what happened seriously, not minimizing it. But it draws the sting in the memory that threatens to poison our entire existence. It involves trying to understand the perpetrators and so have empathy, to try to stand in their shoes and appreciate the sorts of pressures and influences that might have conditioned them. I suppose from an American point of view, you take that and you say you try to understand what causes hijackers to hate so much that they will give their own lives to take out indiscriminately innocent people. Forgiveness doesn't mean forgetting, and as I say, reconciliation doesn't always happen, but forgiveness does mean understanding that we all need forgiveness, that we're all equidistant from God's love. And the reason I say that is because sometimes we can think it's all right if a bomb drops there because God doesn't love them quite as much, because they're not Christian like us. It means understanding that because we all need forgiveness, we all have to let go and not hold bitterness and vengeance close to our hearts. Because as Tutor says, what it does is it destroys us. And that phrase, drawing out the sting that threatens to poison our entire existence, those are really important words that we all need to hear, especially at times when we rightly feel an injustice, a terrible injustice has been done. Tutor says, forgiving means abandoning your right to pay back the perpetrator in his own coin. But it's a loss that liberates the victim. I suppose vengeance is a bit like drinking poison, hoping it's going to kill your enemy, but actually it kills you. Vengeance is something that doesn't lead us on at all. So today it's all about forgiveness. It's reminding ourselves of how much God forgives us and loves us, and how much we need to forgive and love others. But I just wanted to take it back to the very beginning of the parable, because Jesus says, therefore the kingdom of heaven is like. And so it's right and proper that we take all the understandings of this and try and work it into how we live today and how we forgive others and what forgiveness means to us now in our lives. But it's also important that we try and understand this in the context of eternal forgiveness. The kingdom of heaven is like. God's forgiveness is like. And Jesus is really reducing forgiveness down to something very, very simple and straightforward. If this was in theological college and he was doing a theory of the atonement, he'd get a C- for this. You know, it's really basic stuff that scholars would probably look askance at. But it's very simple and straightforward. Jesus says, God recognizes a huge debt, a huge sin in the world. And what he does is he cancels it. He just wipes it out. Just says, I'm gonna change my mind. Now, there's none of this, you know, he's going to pay it back in installments. The king doesn't kind of say he's got a son, the prince, who's going to pay the debt off for him. He doesn't come up with any great, you know, ideas. It just cancels it. The sin is just wiped. The debt is just erased. And God can do that, apparently, just like the king. And so, you know, we are forgiven as a people. We are forgiven. And therefore, we forgive. Not because we fear that we're going to be punished, not because we are unworthy worms. We forgive out of a deep sense of gratitude to God, having been forgiven so much. Unlike that servant, our hearts will be changed and we'll forgive others.